Australia is considered one of the US's main allies in the English-speaking world, but the Conservative Prime Minister, Tony Abbott's increasingly belligerent rhetoric on a number of policy fronts has made him an embarrassing bedfellow of the West. On top of his vehement climate denialism, people in Australia who have a similar history of genocide and oppression, of erasure of their culture and language as indigenous communities do in North America, against this historical backdrop, how do you explain the treatment by the Abbott government of many of these communities? He has moved to try to cut social services and made these very contemptuous remarks, saying that they choose to live in these remote areas and so it's just not worth the taxpayer expense to provide them with services. I mean, this was their land originally.
Yes, it's problematic. This notion about choice, of course, is very much part of the language of, you know, the neoliberal idea that supposedly we all have particular choices we can make, and by virtue of that, we have to deal with the consequences of that. But this is actually very silly. For many reasons, you've pointed out yourself precisely that individuals who have been living in parts of remote Australia, Australia being a huge country and having, of course, considerable, you know, remoteness to it, has this eternal problem of trying to juggle appropriate services and access. There are some Aboriginal communities that do, and this is no exaggeration. There is a certain almost third world status to some of them, and that's one of the disgraces, if you like, that occupies the Australian policy landscape. But what typifies this is the paternalism of the Abbott government, but also governments before, that is to say that there needs to be controls about spending, quarantining, welfare, and things like that. And we saw that under the Howard government, the Conservative Howard government, when it came to the so-called emergency in the Northern Territory, which is a particular regime where in the Northern Territory of Australia, literally the entire territory was subjected to very strict controls about welfare, quarantining of payments, and, of course, the actual involvement of the military in the context of Aboriginal welfare, which is astonishing.
I mentioned earlier that Abbott is, of course, also very much marked by his extreme views on climate change. He set Australia back so many years in climate-friendly policies. There are now plans for the country's biggest coal mine called Carmichael to be established on Aboriginal lands, and there are many groups that are fighting it. Are Indigenous communities in Australia also on the front lines of being impacted by climate change and by fossil fuel use in general?
Well, yes, absolutely. It's very significant that the pursuit of the commodities industry in Australia does have significant impacts on the local populace. And, of course, in particular parts of remote Australia where the mining industry is very active, individuals, the custodians and indigenous populations are heavily affected. When you mentioned the Carmichael project, currently there is a dispute taking place about whether it will go ahead. The challenges being put forth, you know, by the Wangan and the Jagalingu people, and these particular individual custodians are challenging the legitimacy of the project using native title legislation, which is in place. But what is, of course, happening is that the particular response by the Carmichael mine, which is also run by other external interests, including an Indian company, they're arguing that the particular Aboriginal voices that are being made, if you like, in the context of this mine are not legitimate. And that's the great problem that tends to happen with Indigenous populations. We see that in the United States and Canada as well, where the question is who's speaking for whom and what are the economic interests involved here and what are the benefits arising from this. And this is something that, of course, Mr. Cole, otherwise known as Tony Abbott, has exploited to the hilt. It's this idea that he's not interested at all with the climate change debate. Quite frankly, he's interested in seeing how the mineral industry can exploit the environment.
Well, finally, are there domestic political forces in Australia that are hopeful of ending Abbott's tenure? In other words, is he Australia's George W. Bush, and is there hope for undoing the damage that he has done in so many arenas?
To a large extent, dealing with the issue of the opposition, many of his own party, for example, within his own party, the Liberal National Coalition, there is a fear that he has gone too far, that he is too extreme, that he is essentially a reactionary and a fundamentalist figure. Some weeks ago, there was, in fact, a leadership spill, which was designed to test. It was initiated by his own party members. It was designed to test his popularity. And it was evident from the numbers that, you know, 40% of his party were not pleased, quite frankly, with his performance. He has an authoritarian style. He's got a very closed shop when it comes to consultation. And the reality of it is that he acts as if he's in opposition. That's the criticism. So when it comes to his critics, he has critics within his party and without his party as well. Then, generally speaking, when it comes to the legacy about what he will leave, you know, the sad thing about it is that there is a general consensus across the major political parties about aspects of what he does. The problem, rather, is going to be placing Australia back on a track of climate change policy that is constructive and an acceptance that its foreign engagements are flawed and severe and so forth. But that, unfortunately, is not just an Abbott problem, it's an Australian problem.
Well, I want to thank you so much for joining us today and helping shed some light on this issue, and also appreciate the late hour at which you're doing this interview. Thanks so much.
It's a pleasure. Thank you.
Dr. Benoit Campmark is a senior lecturer at the School of Global Urban and Social Studies, teaching within the Bachelor of Social Science in the Legal and Dispute Studies program of a university in Australia. He writes for counterpunch.org.